Well, welcome to another version of Chewing the Yak on WAMF FM 90.3 FM New Orleans. Well, we have a special guest today, Cheryl Gerber, who's a photographer who many of you may know from Gambit, and I've known Cheryl for a really long time, and Cheryl is one of the nicest and shining lights of our city and has been all of her life here, as far as I can tell, and I'm really delighted that she could join us, and I think she's a little trepidatious, as many people are, about being interviewed, and but she shouldn't. She's golden, and I mean that. I mean I'm a lunatic, but I'm a sincere lunatic. You know, one of the things I like to talk about people when they who have some success in their life, I like to talk about how they got started, because often I think that one of the things that I noticed about I'll let you do most of the talk about. I just want to set this up a little bit. I notice when I read biographies of famous people, the first chapters of their biographies are often the most revealing and the most valuable, and I think there should be like a class in all schools for grammar school kids to read the first chapters of famous people's books, because their biographies, because it tells you where they came from, and they didn't all become what they are overnight, and there was some travail and some struggle and obstacles to what they did. Almost everybody, even people who you know supposedly had privilege, or whatever, they come with the vicissitudes of life as well. So by doing this show and talking to other people, I found over time that most of them, the way they got started, people don't really know that story. So if you wouldn't mind telling us that.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for equating me with maybe somebody famous. But anyway, I was born in New Orleans, but like so many of the people back in the 60s, we were part of the white flight and moved to the North Shore, rural North Shore. So I grew up over there. A lot of people might be surprised to know that I grew up in a trailer. My parents, who were lovely people, were very uneducated. My dad grew up Amish in Indiana and probably only went to the 10th grade, and my mother grew up in New Orleans in the Irish Channel and only went to the 7th grade. But you knew my mother, and
yes,
she was quite a character. Despite not being educated, she loved to write.
Right, she was a poet.
She was a poet. She was a playwright. She wrote a book. I mean, nothing that was ever published, but she was very passionate about it and devoted quite a few years to doing that. So I think watching her creativity kind of pushed me along that route, and then my dad, with his Amish work ethic, pushed me in that direction. But, you know, growing up on the North Shore, which was a lovely, fine place to grow up, we weren't really exposed to a lot of different cultures, a lot of different kinds of people, and I was always curious about other people. So when it was time for me to go to college, I didn't have a clue what I was going to study, and I didn't even know if I was going to go to college. It was something that was never talked about in our household. It just wasn't on the radar. If you finished high school, you were doing pretty good. So when I got to college, I studied general studies for like two semesters. Then I had a guidance counselor, and he's like, you know, you got to pick something. And I said, okay, I'll take liberal arts. And he's like, yeah, but you got to emphasize something. And we started talking. Do you like business? Do you like science? No. Do you like math? No. What do you like? Well, I like meeting people, different kinds of people. So we narrowed it down to journalism. And I started studying journalism then and thought it would be really kind of a fun life to interview people and get to know people. So that's what I did. And I worked on a couple of newspapers.
Where'd you go to school?
Southeastern Louisiana okay. University. And I ended up working, doing an internship at the Daily Star with Lillian Miranda. And then I went to the St. Tammany News Banner and quickly realized that I was not a good writer. My editor would fill my pages up with red ink. And one day they gave me a camera to go take pictures with the story. And so I started taking pictures, and the pictures got bigger, the stories got smaller, and the rest was history. I decided I really wanted to work in photography.
Oh, good. So then did you study that then, or did you just...
I didn't study it, but I actually, my first job in New Orleans after I graduated was at New Orleans Magazine. I just happened to walk into New Orleans Magazine the day they fired their editorial assistant. So I got a call the next day and started working there. But they were doing like a buyout. Bill Medcalf owned New Orleans Magazine at the time, and he was trying to sell it to somebody. And to make the numbers work, he had to fire everybody. So I got laid off shortly after I, you know, was working there. While I was laid off, I started trying to think of how I could be a photographer. It didn't seem feasible to me because I didn't have an education in photography. But then I discovered the photographs of Michael P. Smith. I had never met him. I just saw his photographs around town, and I was blown away. I was like, that's what I want to do. So I started calling Michael Smith back when we used to have the white pages and you could actually find somebody.
Yeah.
And he kind of just kept putting me off, I don't know, 4 or 5 times that I called over several months. And he wasn't calling me back. So I was looking in the classifieds for a job and ended up in Honduras teaching English. It was either that or working on a cruise ship. And while I was in Honduras, Michael sent me a postcard and he goes, I thought of something you can do for me when you get back. So when I came back, he let me live in his studio, which was full of his photographs, full of books, full of everything. And he said, make yourself at home. You can have access to everything here, but you can't, you know, I have one rule. You can't change the radio station, WWOZ. So coming from living, you know, on the North Shore and living in New Orleans just for a short time, then Honduras, then back to New Orleans, Michael really exposed me to what I loved about New Orleans, the street culture and all of that. And I've been trying to do that ever since.
Well, you do a great job.
Thank you.
And I'm really happy to have you here. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, everybody, you know, young people now, they want to be they want to be Queen Elizabeth on day one, you know, or, you know, so it's interesting, you know, cruise ship, Honduras, Southeastern, and, you know, and I was just thinking, you know, places like Southeastern don't get enough credit. I mean, you know, you have these smaller universities that give people an opportunity at a higher education.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, these things are incredibly valuable. I mean, our junior colleges as well. You know, I mean, we live in a strange world now. I mean, not that it was any different, I suppose, before, but of, you know, prestige is so great, except when it's not,
right.
Then it isn't, then it is, and it depends on what time of day it is, and, you know what I mean? You know, and, well, listen, what are some of your favorite moments? I know this is kind of putting you on the spot. Some of your favorite moments. How long have you been working for Gambit, by the way?
It's been almost 25 years.
I
wanted to work at Gambit as soon as I picked it up in the early 90s, and David Richmond was the photographer there at the time. He was the staff photographer, and I palled around with him. He was quite an eccentric figure and taught me a lot. But they didn't need another photographer. He was on, I guess, what they would call a retainer. So he would farm some things out to me, like restaurant guides and those sort of things. And I was working at the gumbo shop as a waitress, and a friend of mine said, you know, at some point you're just going to have to jump off and just take the plunge and go do photography. I said, oh, God, I don't know how I'm going to do that. So I was hanging out at Caldi's, hanging photographs in Caldi's, the old coffee shop back in the day. And it was during the time when all the gutter punks started arriving and people were wondering about the gutter punks. And I was wondering, too. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just do a story. A friend of mine said, if you're so curious about the gutter punks, why don't you just do a story on it? So I did. I went and hung out with them for a couple of months, took pictures, wrote the story, and submitted it to Gambit. And I've been working there ever since.
Okay, well, good for us. Well, speaking of gutter punks, I wasn't going to go into this, but the street culture seems to have, well, you know more than I do because you're out there and you live near it. So, and I've seen a few posts on Facebook of different issues. So how do you think, has that changed at all? Or?
It has changed. And first, you know, people do see my posts. And I am not angry at anybody who wants to live that lifestyle at all. That is not the purpose of me posting some of the photos that I post.
Let me interrupt you for a second. Okay, I think that your posts about that are absolutely reasonable, and anybody who thinks otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about, because you have other posts about all these things that you do and what you think, and I think everything that you put down is legitimate and not hateful in any way.
Well, thank you. I don't want to be hateful. What I do want to point out is the city's lax behavior when it comes to enforcing certain rules. In the early 90s, when I was hanging out with the gutter punks, they were much younger. they didn't bring a lot of baggage. They had dogs and they had maybe a bag sitting with them, but they weren't bringing Lazy Boy chairs and tents and, you know, all of the things that we're seeing on the neutral ground these days. And that's what's infuriating me. It's not that people want to live that lifestyle, more power to them. It's the city not enforcing, right, you know, people are not supposed to be camping in public space. And, you know, we use the neutral grounds and we use the sidewalks to walk our dogs and just to live our lives. And it just seems to me like nothing's being enforced.
Well, that's true. Nothing is being enforced. I mean, if we look into our leadership for anything positive, I think we're looking in the wrong spot evidently. This goes on forever and ever. But and the thing is just how I look at it, too. It's like, you know, it's fine that these people have their rights, but when their rights impinge on everybody else in the world's rights at some point, I mean, you know, who gets to decide? I mean, it's like, you know, we do actually, we're supposed to live in a civilization, but, you know, and people think that they can boutique the rules and the laws. Let's talk about your photography instead. I mean, is there any photo that you would like to get that you haven't, like a person or a thing or?
Well, you know, New Orleans is one of those cities where just when you think you've photographed it all,
something else comes up,
and you know, I've concentrated trying to keep a roof over my head for all these years. So I'll photograph anything. I can photograph, I could be in the homes of some of the wealthiest people in town photographing their parties. And then I'm at a second line photographing the street culture. One of the things that as of yesterday that I'm getting involved with is working with the kids at Covenant House. I've been working for Covenant House, taking pictures for their brochures and annual reports, and have kind of fallen in love with some of the kids there and the staff for what they do. And we had a meeting yesterday about, you know, trying to take some of those kids out and teaching them photography, trying to teach them to see things in a different perspective, which I think I have a lot to offer there, not because I'm a great photographer or anything, but coming where I came from and going through a lot of hardship and poverty as a young person, photography was one of those things that really opened up the world to me, because you do see things in a different way and you look at things more closely and you observe other people. And I'm hoping that I can share some of those lessons with some of these kids who have come from unfortunate circumstances.
Well, they would be lucky, and they are lucky to have someone like you. And no one ever calls me, and now someone decides they need to call me all the time.
You're popular.
And I'm very popular. In fact, I might run for president of some country where no one knows me. That's how popular I am, and I will win immediately. Because I don't know if you know this or not, but I'm so brilliant that I glow in the dark. So if you see if you say like you live in North Korea, that's not lights. That's me. That's me tiptoeing through North
Korea.
That's
funny.
Do you have a favorite assignment or something that you usually look forward to, or is there one thing that stands out that you did in all your life?
Well, I mean, there's nothing better than a good second line.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, one of the things that I like is, of course, photographing the street culture. And second lines, I photographed a lot in the 90s when I was hanging out with Michael Smith. And because I was working so much doing other things, trying to make money, I didn't photograph them for a long time. I photographed them kind of intermittently and recently started photographing them again. And they've evolved into this whole other thing. There's a whole culture now of, well, I don't even want to say it on the radio because the city will probably come out and stop it all.
No, don't
say it. It's just fun stuff to photograph.
No, don't say it. I've actually been involved with some of that. I actually told somebody about X, and then X doesn't exist anymore because I told them.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll just keep that hush hush. If you want to know about it, just go to a second line.
Yeah, go to Minnesota. And how has the technology changed? I mean, obviously we have to, you know,
digital
stuff now, and you know, so I mean, that's changed since you've been around. I mean, how do you?
Well, you know, I mean, I was one of those people that didn't even want an autofocus camera when they first came out
until
I discovered that I could, you know, take pictures with one hand and have a beer in the other. And then I was like, okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, you lose some.
Exactly. You know? And I begrudgingly took to digital, but boy, I really don't miss the darkroom. It was just not my cup of tea. I've never been a gearhead with photography. I didn't fall in love with photography. I fell in love with people. And the more time I can spend out on the streets photographing people, and the less time I have to be on a computer doing Photoshop or darkroom work, the better for me. So I never got into all the software and the filters and all of that stuff. I just take the pictures and maybe lightly touch them up and send them in, and it seems to be working for me. Sometimes I feel bad that I'm not a better technical photographer, but it also allows me to spend more time doing what I love, which is just being out in the event.
Well, I think that everybody who's familiar with your work thinks that you do a great job.
Well, thank
you. And that's, you know, that's the final word on that as far as I'm concerned. Well, let's see. You know, you're around the city more than most. Mm-hmm. And so you're probably, you know, in different milieus more than most because of your job. What do you think about the future of the city? I mean, just, you know, I mean, Socrates or, you know, Dorothy Parker moments, but,
no,
you know.
But it feels different. It feels different than it did 30 years ago when I first started out. It's, there are a lot of contributing factors to why New Orleans is where it is right now. Gentrification, you know, Katrina hit, caused prices to soar. We don't have a single newspaper like we used to, so you don't have people kind of bonded around some of the stories of the day. Like, we used to all just pick up the Picayune and there would be the front page story, and that was what we would talk about. Now we have two newspapers and nobody's reading either one of them, and it doesn't feel as bonded like it used to.
Yeah.
It definitely feels...
That is part of the problem in America. You know, when I was growing up, there were only so many TV shows. I mean, networks. And, you know, it's much better to have choice, don't get me wrong.
Definitely.
But also, you know, there's something definitely lost of the cohesiveness of the culture.
Yeah.
That people have the same experiences.
Right.
You know, but I'm sorry, I mean, I interrupted you.
No, I mean, that's, you know, pretty much it. I mean, you can look at the gentrification as one of the biggest things. I mean, I recently just photographed a story for Gambit. They called it F-Stopping Time, where I went back 25 years and recreated some of those photos. And one of the harsh realities was going into Treme to photograph the Andrews family. I photographed them in 2000. I think it was 2000 when Shorty was just starting to kind of get a lot of attention. We photographed the family on a stoop in Treme. It wasn't their house, but it was just a stoop that we thought would look good for the photograph. And we recreated the photograph recently on the same stoop, which is now an Airbnb. And there were actually Airbnbers inside while we were doing the shoot, and I think they were afraid to come out because they saw some black people in front of the place, but it's too bad they missed out. And, you know, it's kind of sad that none of the Andrews brothers lives in Treme anymore. But I see the other side, too. There's renovations of the homes that were falling apart and crime's gone down and that sort of thing.
Well... I look at hip replacements as a form of gentrification. I think that when we get sick, we should just die. Okay? In fact, I was driving down St. Paul the other day, and there was somebody painting their house. Mm-hmm. So I stopped my car, and I jumped out and said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "We're fixing my house." So I shot him.
Oh, God.
So I figured, you know, that'll fix him. And I think Airbnb and gentrification are not necessarily the same thing. I mean, they're not saying they're not part of each other, but that's a difference. But anyway, but it is. I mean, it, you know, I agree with you that, you know, Airbnb is a incredibly intrusive thing, the way it manifests itself.
I mean, we're sitting here in the Marigny, and we have seen the Marigny. When I first moved to the Marigny, we moved here because it was the bohemian place where we had artists and musicians were our neighbors, and now you'll see 8 bachelorettes coming out of the house across the street, jumping into their fire truck to go drink around the city. And it's, maybe that's a fun thing. I personally find it very uncreative and a little disappointing.
Well, you know, I don't give it a whole lot of thought because I have no money. I have no property. I mean, I can't afford to live here either, by the way, because of that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's what it amounts to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it seems to me, okay, Airbnb, okay, you have a house, you have an extra space, fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
If you, because that's good for people who have a house.
I agree with that.
But, then, but if you're going to just buy a house and do that,
I'm with you on that.
You know, and by the way, okay, when I shot that person that was painting their house, I called 911, okay, to turn myself in because I'm a law-abiding citizen, and I fell asleep. And they got there 4, 5, or 6, or 7 hours later, and they thought I was the corpse. So I woke up in the morgue, God. So it was terrible. It was unbelievable. Okay, so I was like, it was a great experience all around. And
that's
so let's see now. How often have you been interviewed, by the way?
A few times, only because in 2015 I did my book, New Orleans, Life and Death in the Big Easy. So.
Well, by the way, let's stop right there. We'll get back to that question. Tell us about your book, because I dropped the ball there.
New Orleans, Life and Death in the Big Easy was not my title. The publisher liked that title. Where I basically took photos that I did over the past 25, 30 years, completely unrelated photos that were done through assignments, or maybe I just did them on my own, and put them as juxtapositions to tell the narrative of New Orleans, you know, the dichotomies of life in New Orleans, rich and poor, black and white, and that sort of thing. So I did get interviewed a few times about that. I got to be on Susan Larson's show, which was a dream come true. Never thought I would ever be on her show. And
she does a great job on that show.
Sherry Alexander interviewed me on her...
And she does a great job on her show as well.
The Writers Forum. And you know, just interviewed for a few different blogs and that sort of thing.
Well, tell them the name of the book again.
New Orleans, Life and Death in the Big Easy.
By Cheryl Gerber.
Yeah, you can find it at all the bookstores here. It's in its second edition, I'm proud to say. And one of the best compliments I ever got about it was a young guy who just moved here from somewhere up north. And he was hanging out at Sydney's Saloon, and I just happened to be there photographing something. I asked if I could photograph him because he looked like an interesting person. And he introduced himself, and I told him my name, and he goes, Cheryl Gerber, I just bought your book. Oh. I bought your book for my parents because they wanted to know about New Orleans. And your book was more about New Orleans than anything else I'd ever seen because it was like the real New Orleans.
Sure.
And that made me that made me feel real proud.
Yeah. I've written a couple of books, and that would mean two. Mm-hmm. And when anybody does give you a compliment, it really is pretty special.
Yeah.
So, but your book is great. I mean, in fact, it really captures the city in a way that, because it's pictures, photos, obviously, that you can make up your own mind about what you're looking at.
Yeah.
As opposed to people telling you what you're supposed to think about something. But it's also, you know, it's there. I mean, it's just revealing on both sides of, you know, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Because it's there, you know, and it's really, I really encourage a lot of people, and say the name of the book again, please.
New Orleans, Life and Death in the Big Easy. And it's got a foreword by Lola Sarek Eli and an essay by Chris Rose.
Okay.
So.
Well, there you go. And mine are by Al Franken and... Mr. Erdogan, who's the prime minister of Turkey.
I love your book. I love your secrets.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I wasn't fishing for a mention of my seminal book about New Orleans, but I'll accept it. You know, is there any question that anybody that you would like somebody to ask you about being a photographer or about anything for that matter?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've noticed going into middle age is how much serendipity has to do with everything. Just being in the right place at the right time. And I know part of it is because I make the effort to go out and go someplace. But the other part of it, 99%, is just, oh, look, you know, Princess Diana just walked up, or, you know, somebody like that. And I think a lot of people underestimate what it's like to just have serendipity smile down on you.
Sure.
It's definitely a big part of what I do.
Well, you know, as a photographer, sure, because you come along to capture that moment, and that moment has to be there for you to capture.
Mm-hmm.
And I can attest to this, too, because I've always been in the wrong place at the wrong time.
I've been there, too.
And this is what happens. You end up being me. So there's a flip side to that, you see. Mm-hmm. You know, it just occurred to me, okay, you grew up in Mandeville, right?
Madisonville.
Well, not the same thing, and I know the difference because my grandmother lived in Mandeville.
Yeah. In fact, I grew up very close to where Chef Leah Chase grew up.
Oh, really?
And recently I heard...
I often get you mixed
up. This tripped me out because I heard during the tricentennial, she was being interviewed by Poppy Tooker on the radio, mm-hmm. and she was talking about walking 5 miles to go pick strawberries.
Yeah.
That was what they did as kids.
Right.
And she, I know exactly where she lived in Madisonville. She was a famous person. We all knew where she grew up. Where we grew up was exactly 5 miles from her house, and it was a strawberry farm. And I can't wait till I see her the next time to ask her exactly where it was, because I can't help but wonder if my hands toiled the same dirt that she, you know,
sure. Yeah.
picked up in.
Yeah, well, my mother grew up in Mandeville, and my mother also picked in the fields as a, as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, one Christmas, she told me she got what she got for Christmas was a orange, and her father had to steal it because they were so poor.
Man, God.
And his her mother ragged out her dad for stealing it because
wow.
that was not the thing to do. Yeah. So anyway, how often do you get to the North Shore?
Well, you know, my siblings all live on the North Shore, so I still go over there a lot.
Okay.
Not so much to Madisonville, because nobody lives in Madisonville anymore, but Madisonville's changed dramatically.
That's what I was going to ask you. How do you find that place, a place that you grew up in, around that milieu, you know, Mandeville, Covington, Madisonville, and now you go back? What do you think?
Well, I mean, when I was there, we had the Wet Dock Bar on one side of the street, which my mother pulled me out of when I was 16 years old. And then there were, you know,
living your life, baby.
Totally. And, you know, now I go and you see the yachts and the mansions on the riverfront, which used to be a shipyard.
Yeah.
The Oak Tree Gang, which I'm not going to mention any names.
It's time for airstrikes, yeah.
The Oak Tree Gang were the pot smokers who hung out in the oak under the oak tree outside the river mark.
You can tell some of the oaks are smaller than the others.
It's studded. It's gone now. It got. I don't know. I think maybe Katrina or one of those storms took it out. Even the oak tree is gone. All of the dive bars are gone.
All of them.
Maybe. Are there any left?
Well,
I don't know.
I don't grow up that much, but there has to be. A friend of mine was in town from New York, and we were looking for a place to get a drink, and this place looked like a bar, so we went in, and guess what it was?
What?
It was a big AA meeting.
Oh, God.
And we asked them for a drink. It looked like a bar. It was in Covington.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But. Yeah, my grandmother grew up in Mandeville, so in fact my aunt, my Aunt John and your mother were friends, because I remember when I met your mom at a poetry reading in Mandeville.
Ruby's Roadhouse,
probably. I think that's correct. And at some point, you know, because I used to go over there a lot, at some point your mom told me that she was friends with my Aunt John, you know. So,
oh, wow.
So
I did not know that.
Yeah. And so that was kind of a
Well, that's when I became
connection.
A Chris Champagne, fan. Because I was going to see my mom and got to see you do your rapid fire poetry, and it was quite impressive.
Well,
that had to be 30, how many years ago? 30
was,
something
well,
years
was,
ago.
It was 65 years ago for me and 19 years for you.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay. Let's see, 30, I think.
Yeah, it had to be.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I'm about to die. And in fact, I have a thing. I have a service. So if I do drop dead before I get out of your door today, okay, I have just go to my wallet and they'll come get me. I don't want you to have to go through that. Okay, I try to look ahead for my friends.
Very cool.
WAMF FM 90.3 on your radio dial, and I ain't kidding. So Gambit's now part of The Advocate.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is it kosher to ask you, does that change anything for you? I mean, or...
It's changed, yeah. It's
good or bad or indifferent? I shouldn't ask you whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, but I suppose...
Here's a Gambit right here.
Yeah.
And I'm not complaining, anybody, John George's.
No.
I am not complaining because I'm glad you bought it. Otherwise, it may have gone under or somebody else may have bought it. But the cover is an Advocate file photo, and if you look through it, it's mostly Advocate photos.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have asked that question.
It's okay, though. I mean, I still get to do Restaurant Guide and
maybe it'll go the other way, though. Maybe you'll get some pictures in the Advocate.
Well, what I'm thinking about doing is going back to what I started out doing, writing.
Okay.
I may want to do some stories.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody always wants to hear a story.
Well, you know, I hate to take time away from you because you're certainly more interesting than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And more delightful as well. And I have a couple. I was racking my brain for things to ask you, mm-hmm. and I have my little foray into journalistic photography.
Oh, good.
I'll tell you. Well, this person will remain nameless. They got me a credential to go and gave me their camera to go take pictures of the Saints game.
Oh, my goodness.
And this is a long time ago. Okay, three things that I remember. One, I was in the end zone and took a picture of somebody, and evidently I was standing at a guy who was sitting in the stands his way. He couldn't see the play because I was in his way. Now I was on the field. Okay, he was up, but so I just turned around and I went, I'm sorry. You know. The other thing that I remember was I decided, you know, they throw passes and stuff, and there's a big pack of photographers right by the line of scrimmage. And I said, you know, maybe something's going to happen 25 yards down the field. So I went by myself 25 yards down the field, and I kneeled down where you could. So I kneeled down, and I had the camera. And sure enough, next thing you know, I hear screaming and hollering, and I see the ball coming right at me in my camera lens. I mean, right at me. So I said, well, I think maybe I should stay right where I am. So I did, okay? And it was like thump, 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 thump. So the play was over. I looked on the screen. They replayed it. And there it is. There I am kneeling down, and here they come. And they all ran on out of bounds on either side of me, hollering and screaming where the ball went flying past me.
Oh,
now, I would have been killed, but they probably would have been ruined,
mm-hmm.
okay? So then, later on, the Chicago Bears were on, like, the two-yard line. So they were on their right hash, which seems like on the right-hand side, and all of the photographers, like sheep, were all there in a big, giant mob. And I said, you know what? I said, what if they go the other way? Because I, you know, I have some expertise because I watch these things, okay? So I go to the other side. So I'm the only one on the other side. They're on this side of the end zone. I'm on this side. Sure enough, I think his name is Bob Avellini, the quarterback, if I'm correct. He bootlegged, which meant he faked to the running back who went right. He put the ball on his hip to hide it. And then he went, as the momentum of everybody went this way, he went the other way.
Wow.
So it was just me and Bob Avellini. So I took a picture of him, and you can see the entire field as he goes into the end zone, and there's nothing there but him.
Wow, that's great.
And then I did. Then I got to the NCAA regionals in Baton Rouge, so I got to sit underneath the basket with all the Sports Illustrated guys.
Wow!
Talk about savages. they had lenses.
Oh yeah.
Like this long, okay.
Some
and I mean, and they would kick you and all kind of stuff, you know. And I was, in those days, I was not so belligerent as I am now, so I let them kick me. Plus, I felt that this is their deal, you know what I mean? I understand.
Well, I'm not. I don't photograph many football games anymore. I've never really been good at it. I'm a huge Saints fan, but one of my editors from Associated Press used to tell me, "You got to get the ball in the picture." That's not an easy thing to do. It's easier with digital than it is.
Yeah,
but in the old
days,
we used to have to drop the film in an envelope, and there used to be 36 exposures on a roll of film, and you had to write with each exposure, like who was in that photo, and go drop the film off. And it wasn't like you got to look at it and see who was in the photo. You just took.
Yeah.
And then when the Saints were going to the Super Bowl, I was photographing a lot of the games back then, but I was too much of a fan. The next day after we won that first, I think it was the Cardinals we beat that was going to put us in the playoffs, my aunt sent me a ESPN clip of me supposed to be photographing Reggie Bush running toward me for the touchdown, but instead I've got my hands up in the air and I'm like, yes! And then the next day, Ted Jackson took a photograph of Drew Brees in the middle of the field from behind with all the photographers on the field photographing him, including myself, except I wasn't taking pictures. I was just smiling at Drew Brees.
Well, nothing wrong with that.
And I think the title of it was Work Ethic, you know, something about like a good work ethic. And I'm going to go.
Did you know that my father played in the NFL?
No.
Yeah. He played for the Los Angeles Rams.
Really? Are you serious? I don't ever know when you're joking or not.
No. He's in the New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. He's an All-American football player at LSU.
Wow.
And he played for the Rams for 4 years.
Wow.
And I bought a picture online of his team. It was 1949 Los Angeles Rams. They were getting on an airplane, so they had the ramp and everything. So I got a picture of it. I got the picture, and it's like everybody is looking at the camera, except him. He's like looking away, but making a face at somebody. Okay, he's right in the middle. So I sent it to my sister, and my brother-in-law says, she doesn't see him. I'm thinking to myself, she doesn't see him? He's right in the middle.
That's so funny. It looks just
like him. And it's his profile, but he's making like monkey shots. He's the only one. It's a beautiful picture. It's beautiful.
That's great.
Now, when he played with the Rams, they had a really good team. They mm-hmm. played for the championship twice when he was there. And his roommate still holds the record for the most yardage passing in a game in NFL regular season history. That record's like 68 or 69 years old, and he still is number one. All the rest of the guys, 2, 3 through 9, are all like, you know, Brady and Roethlisberger, but this guy, Van Brocklin, is still number one. And that was my dad's roommate. But anyway, there was a guy named Glenn Davis, who was the Heisman Trophy winner he was a very famous football player from Army. And my dad said he was the fastest guy he'd ever seen almost. And Tex Schramm, who's in the NFL Hall of Fame, was the PR guy with the Rams then. He ended up being the general manager of the Dallas Cowboys. Well, he decided that they were going to have a photo shoot. And his photo shoot was Glenn Davis was going to jump, one of those pictures where he jumps over the line like this. And the coach was adamant that he'd not do it. And he did it. And he ripped his knee during that picture.
Oh, God.
And that was the end of him.
Oh, man.
Because of a photo op.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
People will do a lot for a photo op.
Yeah, well, you know, but anything for the press.
Anything for the press.
No. Well, you know, I tell you what, I try to, let's see, I must have another question about photography for you. I suppose you look at yourself as a journalist. I mean, that's how you started out. And you are. I'm not saying you aren't.
I do everything.
But what do you try to convey usually? I know that's kind of a broad question, but if you're trying to capture a second line or a politician or anything, I mean, is there a mindset you go through? Is it what you want to try to capture, you know?
I just basically want to show something as you would see it if you were there. I'm not looking to make a beautiful piece of art.
Right.
I just want to be, I'm really good at getting into position mm-hmm. that, you know, many people don't have the opportunity to get into. And I get there and take the picture. I don't touch it up a lot. I just want to show what you would see right there. And it doesn't matter if it's if I'm going to photograph somebody's bathroom or going to photograph, you know, a murder scene. It's just whatever's there.
You know, it doesn't surprise me at all because I know I've been laudatory of you, I hope, here, which you deserve. And that doesn't surprise me because you're a good person, and I think that you try to do the right thing. And that's as opposed to, you know, making some kind of a statement. You're trying to do the job, and you're trying to be fair to the people that you're taking a picture of. And I think that that's what I would expect nothing less of you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, everybody's human, and
sure.
You're going to try
Not
to
me.
Make an image that moves people. In fact, when I was working at the St. Tammany News Banner and I was writing a story about an elderly man who was taking care of his dying wife, we only had one photographer on staff, so they gave me a camera and said, go take a picture while you're out there. And I took a picture. It was the very first picture that I realized the power of photography. And it was just this elderly man leaning over his dying wife, and it was just such a loving picture that people started calling and asking where they could send money to help him.
Yeah.
And it really made me realize the power of an image.
Absolutely.
You know?
No. It's also the power of the image, but it's also the power of the organ that has the image in it as well. I mean, it has to be seen.
You have,
it could be the most powerful image on earth.
And I tell you, with the way that journalism and newspapers are dying these days, I've found my outlet on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people hate Facebook and social media. I find it to be a very useful tool for getting images out there.
Well, listen,
on a daily basis.
People, when I was growing up, people were always down on television as being this unintellectual thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, okay, it's a television. Mm-hmm. It's not even a thing. It has no mind of its own. So, you know, you use it correctly, great. If you don't, not so much. Sesame Street, whatever. You know what I mean? In other words, it's educational. One of the reasons why people know so many things is because of television.
Right.
I mean, you know, you have to, it's what you do with it. It's the same thing, you know.
And I will say, just, you know, we were talking earlier about not being bonded around a single newspaper, I do feel closer to my community on Facebook. I mean, I get to stay in touch with people that I don't see on a daily basis.
Right.
I mean, you know, as we get older, we get busy. We don't have lunch with friends like we used to. We're not hanging out in the bars. And, you know, you go on Facebook and check in on people.
Well, you know, Facebook has, now, Facebook is Facebook. But, you know, like, I try not to put anything on there inflammatory generally.
Mm-hmm.
But I do try to, like, share, because there's so many incredible, you get these videos of these incredible things that are going on all over the world that are such positive things. And those are things I like to share.
Yeah.
I mean, I share when I'm doing a show,
because
that's what I have it for, basically, to let people know.
PR.
For all the good it does me.
Yeah.
Okay. And I should go down and call all the people who haven't come to see me in 30 years, you know. And then I'd have, like, one friend. And by the way, you said that we're all human before. I just want to clear that up. I'm actually not. Okay. I don't claim to be, because I don't want to be, please. But listen, I have a thing on my show that I do called Wait, Don't Shoot Me.
Oh,
God. Now, I don't know whether you want to do this or not.
Oh, my God.
But
I'm not a quick thinker.
There are no right answers, but if you don't mind, let's try it, okay? Let's see. In 1991, well, by the way, we're playing Wait, Don't Shoot Me, the New Orleans game show that tries to explain the unexplainable New Orleans, Louisiana government and culture, and Chris Champagne makes up the questions and the answers, not Cheryl Gerber or anyone else. So blame it on me if you don't like it.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Now, no, well, I think I've tried to be okay with this, so we'll see. Okay. Because I am a comedian or something like that. So I have to, you know, I got to throw myself a bone occasionally. In 1991, a picture, A, became completely electronic and now can pass through matter. B, was photoshopped at a senior prom for platypuses, and platypuses everywhere had a better image of themselves. Or C, in 1991, a picture became worth only 911 words.
I think it is C.
Okay. I said, there are no right answers, you see. In fact, I have a Cheryl.
I have my doubts about the platypus, but.
I have a Cheryl. Well, I'd say it was true, okay? that's the thing about me. You know, if I'm at a party and I'm talking to people, I will often say things that are so preposterous that any thinking human being would know that that's a joke.
Right.
But sometimes you get these people that think, like, I really want them to believe that.
I still don't know if I believe you about your father being an NFL
player. Oh, no. Yeah. You can look it up, okay? He played with Y.E. Tittle, the LSU, mm-hmm. and Steve Van Buren. He played with Norm Van Brocklin and Bob Waterfield and all these famous guys.
Well, sounds like you know.
He was almost the biggest one on the team, too.
Wow.
It's kind of hard to look at me and think that, but
tall.
Yeah, but he was taller than me. He was considerably taller than me.
Wow.
And considerably heavier than me, obviously. Because he was not one of these guys that ran fast. He did run fast for a big guy, but he was a big, giant guy. Big, giant guy. Okay, it's well documented. It's well documented. I wish I had a picture with me, I would show it to you. Okay, let's see. The people homesteading on Esplanade Avenue are explained by what? A, antisocial psychosis. B, the right to bear arms, spelled BareAlms. Or C, proof that we in America will eventually civilize ourselves out of existence.
A. What was A again?
It's an antisocial psychosis.
Oh.
Doesn't mean it's right. She's under the spot. She's under.
No, it's
under,
not A.
It's not A. A, no.
It could be B.
It could be B.
Okay, it could
all right,
be B.
Okay. What does New Orleans need more of to make us complete? A, another snowball flavor. B, a Zapp's potato chip that tastes like, or supposedly tastes like, Tom Benson.
Oh, God.
Or C, well, they're going to run out. They're going to run out. Okay? I mean, that tastes like a Chevrolet.
Oh, gross.
Okay. C, one more second line photograph.
Oh, God. I know how you feel about the second line photographs, because we've talked about it before. But, A.
Okay. Ding, 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 ding. Another snowball flavor. Let's see now. What indeed can you make fun of anymore? A, nothing. B, Chris Champagne. Or C, a person mistaken for Chris Champagne.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's a lot of people.
I'll say Chris Champagne. We can still make fun of you.
You can make fun of Chris Champagne. That's correct. Ding, 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 ding. That's correct. Let's see. I think I have one more question. Let's see if this one's suitable for humans to listen to. When taking a photo of a stranger, you should be prepared to A, tell them you have really photographed them and you have inoculated them with technology that will allow for the Earth and the government to know everything that they do forever.
Ooh.
Or B, that you have captured their soul and you will sell it to the Vatican by the pound. Or C, that you are a creature made of chemtrails and Republicans will soon be in their futures and eat them.
Oh, that's scary. That's just mean. That's mean. But I'll pick B.
Yeah, well, comedy's mean. You know?
That's so funny.
Because it's always the brunt of the joke. I mean, well, thank you for... thank you, unnamed person, for playing Wait, Don't Shoot Me. So has this been as painful as you thought it would be?
Oh, it was fun. It's always fun to sit down and talk to you.
Okay, we're not finished yet. But,
we're not finished.
No,
okay.
No. But, it's amazing, you know, I used to go to Mandeville when I was, like, you know, a little bitty because my grandma lived there. And she's buried there in the Mandeville thing because she did die and they still allow us to be buried. It's just amazing. I mean, it's like a different... Mandeville, especially that area, it's a different world.
Well, even Covington, I went to Covington High, and Covington High, I was a cheerleader in Covington High, and I didn't have money to buy the uniforms, were very expensive, you know. So we would go and ask businesses to sponsor us. There were like two businesses downtown in Covington. Everything was boarded up back then, and I go through there now and photograph the new Southern Hotel and. You know, I think it's El Porto is the fancy restaurant there, and it's quite a place.
Well, last time I looked, it might be different now.
Yeah, it could be different.
I mean, as soon as you leave, it might change it all.
It could be.
You know, that's how they are.
But it's thriving over there.
They're just tricky. They're tricky, those people. They're tricky people. Well, let's see.
You didn't ask me about middle age.
Well, that would be impersonal. I can't compliment how people look anymore because that's some kind of a transgression against humanity.
Yeah, don't go there.
Okay, if you want me to, you know.
Well, I mean, like every other American woman, nobody's looking forward to going into middle age, but I have to say, as a photographer, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I have become invisible on photo shoots. When you're young, you stand out, and everybody's, you know, acting differently when you're trying to take pictures. Mm-hmm. They're posing. But when you're middle-aged, you just kind of slide in, and nobody's noticing you, and they don't expect anything bad of you. So you could be taking photos that may not put them in the brightest light, but... They're very unsuspecting. It's been pretty fun. And the other thing is just looking back at the work that I did when I was young, and those photos look historic now.
Well, maybe
never thought that would happen.
Well, I have to commiserate. I'm looking forward to death.
And
I revel in it at every moment. Whenever I eat a green pea, I eat it slower, I savor it, and I eat every pea individually, which takes a long time. And that's why I lost weight, and I have to put lug nuts in my pants so I won't blow away now. Because when you eat every green pea individually,
it
takes a lot
weight.
Of time, and it's a terrible situation. Mm-hmm. But well, I've been lucky in my life. Now it's over now, but I've been lucky in my life to been bestowed with a lot of wonderful friends, a lot of people that I've met through doing. Or trying to do whatever it is that I try to do.
Well, we're both lucky. I mean, I think New Orleans is that kind of place where you can be a poet and a comedian, and I can be a freelance photographer, and people can be musicians. It's a gig economy, you know, and you can do it. It's harder now. It's more expensive than it used to be, but you can still do it.
Well, if you're looking for something new, okay, you could be a crime expert, okay, because I figured it out, okay? This is a little tidbit from my shows. What do you have to, how many crimes do you have to commit to be an expert on crime? It's a trick question, okay? The answer is none. It's like being an artist.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm an artist. Okay. You're an artist. Okay. I'm a crime expert.
I know. I always joke about, like, whenever, it's embarrassing sometimes when somebody asks, what do you do for a living? You say you're a photographer, and they just go, oh,
I know.
But I said, you know, it could be worse. I could say I'm a poet.
Yeah, it's true. I know. Listen, whenever you tell anybody that you're a poet, it's like so pretentious.
I know.
You know what I mean? So I just tell them that I'm God's insurance agent. I sell God insurance, and I never pay.
Never pay.
Because, but I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's like, you know, if I live long enough, which I won't, you know, you won't be able to do anything. You won't be able to say anything. You won't be able to do anything.
See, but don't you feel like you can say anything now? I mean,
well,
I can
say anything because no, you can't say anything. I mean, and you shouldn't be able to say anything. Okay, I mean, let's face it. I mean, there are things you shouldn't say. I mean, I understand this concept, but I mean, you know, it's just getting to be so absurd.
Well, like my dear Amish father used to say, "It's all been said."
Yeah. Well. Well, why didn't he tell me this a long time ago? I would have kept quiet. I mean, is there
it's all been said, but it's, you know, different perspectives on how to say it.
Is there a picture that you can't take?
There are a lot of pictures that
I don't. You don't have to tell me what they are, because I'm sorry, I interrupted that thought.
Yeah, there are pictures you can't take.
But I mean, in the same way as the things you can't say. You know what I mean? In other words, there's also something, but we're kind of getting to the end here, and I want to thank you so much. Mention your book again before we...
Oh, New Orleans, Life and Death in the Big Easy.
You can get it on Amazon or...
You can get it on Amazon, but, you know, you might want to support Octavia Books, Garden District Books. You can get it at Barnes & Noble.
Sure.
But I love Octavia and Garden District Books. They've been so great.
Yeah. It's good to look to local bookstores. You're listening to WAMF FM 90.3 FM in New Orleans. I was supposed to say that a few times. I forgot. I'm an amateur at this. That's what I wanted to ask you before, a little bit earlier. You were talking about the picture of the gentleman with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a journalist, I mean, you don't work for a daily newspaper like the Picayune or the Advocate, so it's a little different probably. So you're not like going to crime scenes. But I mean,
right.
You know, if you probably have to do that sometimes, I mean, you know, there has to be some kind of a, you know, personal protocol that you try to adhere to as far as, like, you know, going into people's, you know, suffering.
Yeah, I mean, it is tough. I don't do a lot of breaking news now, but I did for a good, you know, 12, 13 years. I did a lot of breaking news. And I guess the worst would be putting a camera on somebody grieving at a crime scene. That's awful. And
sure.
I learned the hard way not that long ago, probably in the last year or so, when I was on a scene and one of the ladies, I think she was the mother of the victim, was not happy about me taking photos of them.
Sure.
And I tried to talk to her and explain, and the more I talked, the angrier she got. And another photographer who was there from the Picayune was very nice and told me, just stop talking. Just move aside and just do your job. Just stop talking.
Sure.
So.
Well. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard situation to be in all the way around. I mean, but certainly,
it's tough, and I learned, do you remember the 1996 Louisiana Pizza Kitchen murders?
Yes.
I remember going there the next day. People were putting out flowers, and there was a guy kneeled down on the sidewalk with his head in his hands, weeping, and when I took the picture, the click of the camera was so loud. He looked at me, and I thought he wanted to kill me.
Yeah.
And we got into a big fight. The photo ended up running on the cover of Gambit.
Yeah.
And he later, he looked me up and called me and said he was sorry, that he was very grateful that I took the photo because it showed the tragedy.
Well,
you know,
good.
And it was
a
beautiful... But sometimes when you're in that moment...
Sure. Human tragedy. This is what Pulitzer Prizes are made of.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that photo.
You know, well, you'll get one. I'll tell you what. I'll plan something so unbelievably egregious, and I'll call you first.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, listen, we're running out of time here, and I want to thank Cheryl Gerber, our guest on Chewing the Yak today, for sharing her stories and herself with us. And she's one of the best people in the city.
Oh, you are too nice.
No, you are. You absolutely are. There is no doubt about it. Okay, I got my head up my behind. and I know what I'm talking about. Okay, I might be a lunatic, but I am a very observant lunatic.
Well, if I ever run for the Supreme Court, I'm sure all of my darkness will come out.
Well, then I will be there to to negate that.
Oh, thank you.
As a witness. I'm a witness. Amen, brother.
Thank you, Chris. This was fun.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's always good to see you.
You too.
WAMF FM 90.3 on your radio dial. And I ain't kidding.